Protesters shut down Delta Port.
We need a ceasefire now.
Demonstrators target the flow of goods, saying Canada is complicit in Gaza's suffering.
New developments in the case of a protester accused of assaulting a police officer.
Our officers had formed a line to prevent this group of protesters from getting onto the bridge.
What we're learning about the suspect.
And a disturbing discovery on a rural road near Mabel Lake. How it might be connected to a recent missing persons case.
You're watching Global BC. This is Global News Hour at 6.
Good evening. Thanks very much for joining us. The war between Israel and Hamas had local repercussions today as protesters blocked the Delta Port container terminal for several hours.
The demonstration disrupted traffic for several kilometers and, as Emily Lazatin reports, was part of a global day of action to draw attention to the plight of Palestinians in Gaza.
The message behind this protest at the Delta Port is one we've heard numerous times.
We need a ceasefire now.
The group taking a stand against companies that have contracts with Israel.
Zim is one of the main companies that has been coming into ports all along the west coast of the U.S. and Canada, arming Israeli military. And so people have been blocking Zim ships for over a decade. Those ships and those arms come through the Delta Port.
A spokesperson from the port says the event severely impacted operations, but it was back to normal by afternoon.
The effect on operations are mainly financial because it clearly is going to shut down your port operations for several hours. That means you're being unproductive in terms of your loading and unloading time.
Monday's pro-Palestinian demonstration was part of a coordinated worldwide effort to disrupt the economy. In Halifax, 21 people were arrested for refusing to leave streets. Protesters linking arms blocked a freeway leading to Chicago O'Hare International Airport. And vehicles came to a standstill on the Golden Gate Bridge. And in Oakland, protesters on a highway chained themselves to concrete-filled barrels.
Israel has no problem getting military aid from Canada, from the U.S., but yet we're finding it so challenging to get humanitarian aid to people in Gaza.
Close to 1,200 people were killed when Hamas militants launched an attack into southern Israel in October. More than 32,000 Palestinians have been killed in the subsequent Israeli invasion of Gaza. Demonstrators want organizations to feel the impacts here.
Israel is an important trading partner, obviously, but they certainly aren't a top 10 country, in either in terms of the number of containers or the dollar volumes.
This will probably continue if Israel doesn't stop killing Palestinians in both the West Bank and Gaza.
Delta police say no one was arrested. Emily Lazatin, Global News.
An arrest has now been made in connection with an assault on a police officer at a similar Vancouver protest last month. VPD says the suspect gouged an officer's eye. Catherine Urquhart has more.
1 month ago, Vancouver police released images of a protester. The woman had been part of a demonstration on the Granville Street Bridge March 2nd, during which there were calls to end the conflict in the Gaza Strip. VPD say the woman assaulted a police officer.
The officer was struck in the face and had their eyes gouged at by an item that the protester was holding.
The suspect then escaped in the crowd.
There was a big scuffle with the police and their bikes in one corner. And the woman in question, she was right in the thick of it.
Now, Vancouver police have arrested a 33-year-old suspect.
The investigation is ongoing. We're still gathering evidence. We anticipate that at the conclusion of the investigation, we'll be in a position to forward recommended criminal charges to Crown Counsel so that this person can be formally charged under the criminal code.
The suspect has been released from custody. Demonstrations are becoming more frequent, more violent, and more costly, according to VPD. Last year, there were more than 1,000 protests in Vancouver, with overtime costing more than $4 million. Catherine Urquhart, Global News.
RCMP confirmed they are investigating a suspicious death after a body was found near Mabel Lake Provincial Park in the North Okanagan. That news comes 2 days after a 44-year-old woman disappeared from the Lumbee area. As Claudia Van Emmerich reports, a man was arrested in connection with the death, but has since been released from police custody.
We're at the Lumbee RCMP detachment, where we can now tell you that Major Crimes is investigating after a body was found on a Forest Service road north of Maple Lake Provincial Park.
This was the scene along Maple Lake Forest Road on Monday. RCMP search and rescue in the corner, all on site, one day after the body of a female was located in the rural location. While RCMP have not confirmed the identity of the deceased woman, it is believed to be that of 44-year-old Tatiana Stefanski. She went missing on Saturday morning and was last seen speaking with her ex-husband at a home on Highway 6 in Lumbee just after 8 a.m. On social media, Stefanski's current partner, Jason Gaudreau, said Stefanski was pushed into her ex-husband's black Audi. That vehicle was located on Sunday, about 6 kilometers from where the body was located. It was towed to the Lumbee RCMP detachment. Tonight, RCMP are confirming that a man believed to be involved in the death was arrested in the general vicinity, but that he has since been released from police custody with a number of mandatory conditions to abide by. RCMP say they believe this incident to be isolated and that there is no risk to the public. Investigators are appealing to the public for any video or dash cam footage from along Highway 6 through Lumbee and north along Shuswap Avenue or Lumbee-Maple Lake Road towards and up the east side of Maple Lake between 7 a.m. on Saturday and 10 a.m. Sunday. If you do have any video, you are asked to contact the Southeast District Major Crime Unit.
RCMP not saying a whole lot more at this point, as this investigation is very much in its infancy. Claudia Van Emmer, Global News, Lumbee.
A public hearing has begun into what role the actions of a Victoria police officer played in the death of a woman almost 5 years ago. Three previous investigations cleared the officer of any wrongdoing. But as Kylie Stanton reports, the latest hearing follows a review of those findings by a retired judge. And the woman's family is hoping it answers their questions.
Ron Roche will spend the next 3 weeks walking through these doors. But at this point, he and his family are used to repetition.
It's been very difficult, and I'm sure hearing all this stuff again is going to be very difficult for the whole family.
On Monday, the public hearing into the death of his daughter, Lisa Roach, got underway. The third time the incident has been reviewed. But the family says there are still questions. In fact, they have 8 pages worth.
We don't get clarification, we don't get transparency, and that's very, very difficult when you're dealing with a violent death of your family member.
On Christmas Day 2019, the 43-year-old was hit with 3 rounds from an Arwin, what police call a less lethal weapon that fires plastic projectiles. She died in hospital 4 days later.
She did allegedly threaten everybody in the apartment with a knife.
The 911 call was made from this housing complex where Roach was living in Unit 311, where things quickly escalated.
And refusing to leave, and she's starting to smash the apartment.
With the apartment on fire and visibility low, Victoria Police Officer Ron Kirkwood fired shots from the Arwin into the unit, striking Roach in the back of the head.
Is there no accountability?
Kirkwood is now facing allegations of abusive force and neglect of duty.
The one thing that I would like to see come out of this is that the Arwin not be allowed to be used in situations like this. You don't go into a tiny little suite and shoot somebody 3 times in the back of the head from 15 feet away.
In a statement, Victoria Police Chief Del Mannix said Vic PD has made recommended changes to note-taking policy and created clear guidance on reporting requirements in use of force incidents. It will now be up to Wally Opal, who is adjudicating the hearing, to decide if that goes far enough and perhaps finally provide some closure for the family.
We've always had this little glimmer of hope, always, and hopefully after this is over, it's over.
Kylie Stanton, Global News.
Surrey RCMP are warning the public about a sex offender living in Surrey. Police say 56-year-old Leonard Ramstead poses a risk to young children and adolescent girls. He's received a statutory release ahead of his sentence completion in September 2026. His conditions prohibit him from having alcohol or drugs, and he is not to communicate with or be near anyone under the age of 16. Back in 2019, Ramstead was convicted of sexual interference of a person under the age of 16, and in 2021 of sexual interference of a person under the age of 14.
The man accused in a robbery and double stabbing at Vancouver's Olympic Village on Boxing Day has pleaded guilty to the charges against him. Kristen Robinson has the details and the latest from one of the victims who says he still hasn't fully recovered.
Dressed in a suit, Sheldon Ilbeghi-Asley walks into BC Provincial Court with his family before pleading guilty to two counts of assault with a weapon and one count of theft under $5,000.
Is there anything you'd like people to know, Sheldon, about what happened?
Ilbeghi-Asley was originally charged with robbery in connection with a Boxing Day Facebook Marketplace heist in Olympic Village. The 21-year-old accused of pepper spraying a seller and trying to steal a pricey computer graphics card before stabbing two Good Samaritans who chased him down.
When I was trying to grab him, he pushed me with his knife and it cut my hand. My tendon was cut.
DoorDash employee Miraj Ahmed was stabbed in the hand while a second delivery worker took a knife to his shoulder.
People should be safe from this kind of people. I don't want to see that repeat, yeah.
The suspect's legal counsel has asked the courts to order a psychiatric assessment to address addiction and mental health diagnoses and treatment. Ahmed hopes his attacker will get the help he needs.
If court think that he needs medical treatment, then he should get that. He should get that space and time.
Meantime, the Good Samaritan says he hasn't been able to return to work delivering food because he can't lift or grab anything with his left hand, which is still healing.
And then I have to release him.
He bought a car in January to help with his recovery, but was recently hit by another driver and is now dealing with ICBC. Ahmed, who did not have MSP coverage prior to the stabbing as a newcomer to Canada, is also facing a close to $2,000 bill for his surgery and emergency fees at VGH.
It's a very crisis moment for me. It's an economical crisis for me because I could not work for almost 3 months, so it was tough for me to pay the bill.
Ahmed is hoping victim services will come through in terms of compensation and restitution so he can pay the hospital debt before it goes to a collection agency.
I hope for the best, yeah, that I can.
Ilbeghi-Asley will return to court in July for a pre-sentence report. Kristen Robinson, Global News.
A multi-vehicle crash involving a pedestrian in Surrey on Friday night has now turned fatal. The crash happened just after 8:30 near 61A Avenue and 144th Street. When officers arrived, they found a 23-year-old male pedestrian that had been struck by an SUV. He was taken to hospital and has since died from his injuries. The driver was also taken to hospital but has since been released. Police say the SUV also allegedly crashed into a pickup truck stopped at a red light, causing it to roll over. The occupants of that vehicle sustained only minor injuries and were treated at the scene. The investigation continues. Mounties say speed is believed to have been a factor.
The role of accounting firm MNP in administering provincial government grant programs is facing some new scrutiny.
BC's Auditor General has already launched an investigation into the company's handling of the Clean BC program. Now, as Richard Zussman reports, questions are being raised about the Buy BC agriculture grant program.
It is one of the government's most recognizable programs. Buy BC can be seen from grocery store shelves to shopping bags. It also provides grant money directly to businesses.
You know, it's our money, right? And so British Columbians are going to want to know that the grant programs are going to the organizations that deserve them.
Accounting firm MNP administered the Buy BC grant program while at the same time providing consultation services for the top three recipients. Documents obtained through FOI show the Wine Growers of BC bringing in $75,000, the BC Chicken Marketing Board getting nearly $66,000, and BC Food and Beverage getting a little more than $45,000.
What type of safeguards does the government put in place with these contracts, and what type of oversight are they actually providing?
The Auditor General recently brought into review another government program, MNP being accused of both providing grant writing services and administering a Clean BC program. MNP's policies and procedures prohibit employees from providing grant writing services for any program we administer. A statement reads, "Our program administration work on behalf of Buy BC is no different." But the perception is a challenge for MNP, clear during this recent podcast interview.
our consulting group works with a lot of these grants. You know, some of them we can't work directly. That you have the producers have to apply for them, but we can guide him and let him know what it's all about. And then there's others that we can get involved and help them apply for.
Government supports the Auditor General's review, and one expert says this is a perfect example for why all administration of grant programs should be brought in-house.
But to have that kind of program delivery capacity, I think, on its own is likely to be, you know, certainly presents less of these potential conflicts of interest.
It's that perception critics point to, especially considering in the case of BuyBC, these organizations have roughly been receiving the same amount of money before and after MNP got involved with admin. Richard Zussman, Global News, Victoria.
Just ahead, an historic deal on Haida Gwaii.
We're creating a new story in our history here.
The province lives up to a promise of reconciliation, recognizing Indigenous title to the land, why it's the first deal of its kind in the country, and what it means for other First Nations and private property owners. Next on the NewsHour.
Things happened here, and then some unfortunate things happened here.
A father and son saved by PNE staff nearly 2 years apart. The amazing coincidence and how the heroes are being recognized today.
And Tim Hortons tries something new to cut down on plastics, hoping you won't even notice. That's still to come tonight.
Right now, though, the Haida Nation and the provincial government have signed an historic agreement recognizing Aboriginal title over all of Haida Gwaii's approximately 200 islands.
It's the first of its kind deal. It's a first of its kind deal in Canada, rather. Aaron MacArthur has more on what it means for the Haida Nation and others who live and work there.
And the signing is proceeding.
It has taken decades to get to this point. The BC government formally recognizing Aboriginal title on Haida Gwaii. The agreement, the first of its kind in Canada, reached outside the treaty process and outside of the courts.
Haida Gwaii is Haida land, always has been, and always will be.
It will be the first time in Canada the title is recognized in this way. It is an entirely different way of recognizing title, something that the courts have been telling us to do for a long time.
The agreement has been signed and ratified by the Haida Nation, but it must still be passed by the BC legislature. Once in place, the two sides will negotiate the terms over the course of the next 2 years. But according to the agreement, Aboriginal title will not affect public services like ferry terminals, healthcare, or schools. It also includes a commitment from the Haida to leave privately owned lands unchanged and under provincial authority.
People who have private property, who own property on Haida Gwaii, are not going to be affected by this agreement. And we've found a kind of a way of balancing things that I think should create certainty and clarity, not confusion.
Critics, though, are concerned the agreement makes it more confusing for fee simple ownership.
Government needs to be held to a very high standard of have they done an adequate job of balancing competing societal interests with those of the Haida? And the answer is clearly they have not. This has created even more uncertainty than litigation.
The Haida Nation has several legal challenges underway against the federal and provincial governments. Issues include jurisdiction over marine ecosystems and airspace rights. But the Haida are also seeking damages for the loss of traditional territory to private landowners. According to lawyers, as issues are negotiated over the next few years, they can be dropped off the court challenge.
The heart and soul of this agreement is title recognition, but the muscle is the negotiation of jurisdictional arrangements and the reconciliation of laws, and that's going to take place over the next 2 years.
We've all witnessed history here today. Hold them up high.
Murray Rankin, BC's Minister of Indigenous Relations, says the law will be introduced as soon as possible. And should be in force later this spring. Aaron MacArthur, Global News.
Just ahead, Donald Trump makes history again, this time as the first former president ever to stand trial. What happened in his hush money court case today?
And a preview of tomorrow's federal budget and how the government will spend your money.
It was almost 1 year ago when Donald Trump became the first former president ever to face criminal indictment over alleged hush money payments involving a porn star.
Today, history again when the search began for an unbiased jury, despite attempts by Trump's defense team to derail the trial. Reggie Cicchini has the details.
A drive he's taken so many times before marked a new moment in history for Donald Trump.
There is no case. This is political persecution.
The former president walked into a courtroom on Monday for a trial that will now be in the hands of 12 anonymous New Yorkers coming solely from Manhattan, which overwhelmingly voted against Donald Trump.
It may take some time to impanel a jury, but they will be able to find jurors who will be able to say that they will be able to make a decision impartially.
With this trial officially underway, America, staring down this year's election, has been thrust back to a time before the 2016 election.
Did you know about the $130,000 payment to Stormy Daniels?
Yes, Michael Cohen. Trump's former fixer, Michael Cohen, testified that he facilitated payments to keep an alleged affair quiet and was reimbursed by Donald Trump, which legal experts call a misdemeanor that was beefed up because it was done to keep news from voters.
If it leads to concealing another crime, in this case, it would possibly be a campaign finance violation, then it becomes a felony.
Once the jury is chosen, the trial is expected to last between 6 and 8 weeks, and Trump will be required to attend, forcing him to watch the presidential race from the outside.
Time and money are finite. Time and attention are our most precious resources. Time and attention devoted to Trump's trials are time and attention not devoted to governor's races, House and Senate races.
There's also a question of who will testify. Karen McDougal, another woman alleged to have had an affair with Trump, will take the stand. So too could Stormy Daniels, Michael Cohen, and even Donald Trump.
Yeah, I would testify, absolutely.
If convicted, Donald Trump could face 4 years for each of the 34 charges that he faces, although legal experts say jail time is unlikely. He's also expected to appear in court on April 23rd for another hearing after the New York District Attorney argued he violated his gag order and should be held in contempt. Reggie Cicchini, Global News, New York.
In New Mexico, the weapons supervisor on the set of the movie Rust has been sentenced to 18 months in prison. Hannah Gutierrez-Reed was the armorer during the filming of Rust in 2021. She was found guilty in March of involuntary manslaughter. She mistakenly loaded a live round into a prop gun for actor Alec Baldwin, who then fatally shot cinematographer Helena Hutchins and injured director Joel Sousa. Baldwin will face his own manslaughter trial in July.
Coming up, catching cancer too late.
Much of this death and suffering could have been avoided.
Why a group of medical experts says Canada's screening guidelines put patients at risk.
Plus, double, double, hold the plastic. Tim Hortons tests out a new environmentally friendly lid for its coffee. Well, normally details of a government budget are a tightly kept secret, but not this year.
Nope. After an unprecedented 2 weeks of major multi-billion dollar spending announcements, the big question is, how will the federal government pay for it all?
Our plan is based on the belief that a strong economy is a fair economy.
And for the Trudeau government, a fair economy is one that tackles the challenges of the country's millennials and Generation Z, challenges that center on the high cost of housing.
They now feel like middle-class stability is out of reach. We need to meet this moment, because that can't be allowed to happen.
The PM and his ministers have already announced more than $37 billion in new spending or lending commitments, much of that to spur new home construction and to assist renters. The big question for the budget is how to pay for all of that. Government sources say expect higher taxes on the wealthy, though it's unclear how much extra revenue that would produce.
That does create a risk that we do see a flight of some of the top earners from Canada.
Take on that corporate greed.
The Liberal minority government will rely on the NDP to get its budget through the House of Commons, and the NDP want higher taxes too, but on the profits from grocery store chains and from oil and gas companies.
We absolutely believe that the wealthy should pay their fair share, but what we've been focused on when we look at the cost of living crisis we're in, it's large corporations that are exploiting Canadians.
The Conservatives, on the other hand, had a stark warning about debt.
Our debt is 3.5 times our economy.
This 18-minute video, narrated by Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre, was released over the weekend.
This is Debt Nation, Episode 2, Large Debt Buildups.
Economists, though, are less worried about government debt.
Is the deficit and the debt level as bad as where we were in the 90s? Absolutely not.
But economists are concerned about household debt levels, especially among millennials. And they say that is a risk that the government ought to account for in Tuesday's budget. David Akin, Global News, Ottawa.
Tim Hortons stores in the Ottawa area are trying out a new supposedly eco-friendly lid for hot drinks over the next 6 weeks. The company says it's an improved version of one tried in Vancouver and in Prince Edward Island earlier this year. Sean Preville has more on the new product and whether it does what Tim Hortons says it does.
Tim Hortons guests visiting some Ottawa or Gatineau stores may notice their cup of joe has a new look in the next few weeks. The company is testing out a plastic-free fiber lid made from plant-based materials for its hot drinks.
We've been making a number of changes to packaging over the last number of years, and we've been transitioning all of our packaging towards reusable, recyclable, and compostable options.
It's not the first time Tim Hortons has made changes. They stopped double-cupping drinks in 2020 to reduce waste and tested out fiber-type lids in Vancouver and Prince Edward Island in the past year. Paul Yang says the latest lid is an improved version of both trials, tweaked based on feedback.
To get better functionality out of that lid and address some of the concerns that guests had on maybe absorption of liquid into the lid and so on.
But some sustainability experts say there's more that can be done. Ren Montgomery says the lid changes are a good step as using fewer plastics is helpful, though she encourages companies like Tim Hortons to be more transparent on sustainability, including how the products are made and disposed of, such as through composting, and any environmental impacts the new products may cause.
Whenever I'm not seeing a company being really transparent about those sort of things, I start to wonder.
Montgomery says consumption is a big problem at all levels, noting individuals buy and throw away too many things, from yoga pants to disposable cups. When it comes to sustainability and the environment, Montgomery urges companies to be bold.
Stop sort of hesitating. Just dive in. Make some big changes. Be more sustainable.
Global News did inquire whether Canada could see these fiber lids rolled out nationwide. Yang says the company is still learning what works before it makes a final decision. He also says the company will continue to push for sustainable options across all packaging, but it may not be plastic-free in every scenario. Sean Preville, Global News.
Restaurants saw one of the largest job losses of any major industry last month. According to Restaurants Canada, the industry shed 26,600 jobs, putting employment at its lowest point since December 2022. BC lost 9,400 jobs in the industry this year. The association says the decline in employment reflects the decrease in spending at restaurants, with Canadians spending an average 6% less in January compared to the year before. Restaurant owners have been dealing with food increasing costs up 24%, and labor costs increasing as well, 15% in the last 2 years.
Well, there are calls tonight for cancer screening to begin earlier. A group of leading Canadian doctors says changing the guidelines could help save lives.
A group of doctors did not mince words on Parliament Hill Monday, saying many current Public Health Agency of Canada guidelines for cancer screening are out of date and putting patients at risk.
Much of this death and suffering could have been avoided if Canadian screening guidelines had been based on modern scientific evidence.
The agency has a designated task force that helps develop health guidelines. But these experts say it's time for a much-needed update. The advocates are part of a group called the Coalition for Responsible Healthcare Guidelines. Dr. Fred Saad is the director of prostate cancer research at the Montreal Cancer Institute.
Task force recommendation against screening is outdated, overly simplistic, and goes against all other guidelines that encourage shared decision-making with patients. This has led to an increase in patients presenting with advanced, incurable stages of the disease.
Dr. Paul Wheatley-Price says provinces are taking matters into their own hands.
British Columbia was the first to initiate a lung cancer screening program. Ontario now has a program. Nova Scotia has just announced. Alberta, Quebec, other provinces are in the process. So they've really seen these guidelines as essentially not fit for purpose.
In an emailed response to Global News, the task force says it applies international best practices for evidence review and guideline development used by guideline panels around the world. For each guideline, we rely on subject matter experts and patient partners. and that guidelines published by the task force consistently receive top quality ratings by international organizations.
The Public Health Task Force is currently reviewing guidelines for breast cancer screening. That update is expected to be released in the coming weeks. Catherine Ward, Global News, Toronto.
4.5 million gamers worldwide have advanced medical science just by playing video games.
This research could directly lead to a universal catalog of all known microbes, which could lead to new breakthroughs in food, medicine, exercise, the sky's the limit. And it all starts with you playing a video game.
Researchers at UC San Diego and McGill University created a mini game within the video game Borderlands 3. The game had players organize puzzle blocks based off strands of DNA from real-life gut microbe samples. In half a day, players collected 5 times more data about microbial DNA sequences than earlier games made by the university had collected over 10 years. Researchers will now use the results to improve AI programs that will carry out this work in the future.
Coming up, heroes at PNE.
The end result was a great story at the end of the day.
Employees recognized for heroically saving a father and son several months apart.
And coming up in sports, Canuck Nation thrilled about the return of Thatcher Demko.
At Global News at 11, we know the issues that affect British Columbians happen all throughout the day. Global News at 11, current, local, and now a full hour.
Local news every day. We are BC's news.
A warning from the regional district of Okanagan-Similkameen tonight. Bears are awake and they're hungry.
According to the district, the recent warm weather is prompting an increase in wildlife activity. Some tips from the RDOS to avoid attracting bears include storing garbage in a secure area, removing bird feeders from your yard, and waiting until the morning to pick up or put out the garbage. BC has the largest population of black bears in North America. The RDOS says interactions within the district reached new highs in 2023.
And in related news, I am also hungry.
It's getting close to dinner time. It is getting. I can hear it grumbling over here, just like an angry bear.
I know. I don't know why it gets so loud. All right, Chrissy, that is a beautiful shot behind you.
It is. So I thought I would start with this. It just really shows the beautiful weekend that we had. This is from Greg Reilly in Carameas, the wildflowers. And he says these were wild horses as well. So a stunning shot. Yes, we had a great weekend, but today we had a cold front that moved through. And this was the day out there today. Gray and a little cooler, not wet necessarily. But look at these temperatures. Metro Vancouver only warming up to 10 degrees. And typically we'd be up to about 13, 14 degrees. So we've seen a massive drop in temperature over the last 24 hours right across the province. And we'll continue to see that drop across the southern regions as this cold front continues to swing towards the south. Now, what that means is, yeah, we're still expecting snow over the higher elevations, but the freezing level in the Okanagan Valley will drop to near valley bottom. So flurries possible in your region, and the precipitation will be really spotty. And this is even into the afternoon hours, spotty precipitation expected in behind that cold front. But in the afternoon, you can expect it to ease to showers. Vancouver Island, lots of sunshine for you, as will the northern regions enjoy sunshine. Metro Vancouver, though, with that north to south flow, we have a chance of an isolated shower over the mountains or out through the Fraser Valley. Overall, though, it should be dry. And here's a look at the mountain forecast, or mountain highway forecast, I should say. So yes, snowfall all across the areas east of Hope, is particularly at the Rogers Pass region that's under a special weather statement right now, 5 to 10 centimeters possible. Just showers in the forecast for the Sea to Sky Highway as we head into the day tomorrow. So the precipitation will be very spotty. Again, cold overnight in the Okanagan. That'll be wet flurries for you, or flurries, and then changing over to showers pretty quickly. Lots of sunshine across Vancouver Island. And for our region, we are expecting a slight chance of a shower passing over the mountains from north to south, but mostly it should be dry. What happens is when those cells make their way over the mountains, it really does dissipate and we just get a bit of cloud cover. There's your week, though. Lots to look forward to, that's for sure. And tonight's Central Windows weather window comes to you from the Abbotsford Tulip Festival, which is at Lakeland Flowers right now. And that's a Savannah Sparrow there. Beautiful shot, John Jansen. Thanks so much for sharing that.
Very, very spring-like, Christy. Thank you.
Sure is. Even as we talk about our favorite winter sport, hockey,
Well, you want to be playing hockey in the spring. Let's put it that way.
That's true.
Close to summer. Spring, close to summer. That's what you want. And it's official, as was the plan. Thatcher Demko will start tomorrow's game against Calgary.
Well, he's healthy. He's ready to go. So, you know, obviously, he's definitely going to play tomorrow. And we'll go from there.
And this will be Demko's first game since he injured his knee back on March the 9th against Winnipeg.
Also coming up tonight.
Just grateful he's okay.
How PNE workers saved a man and then 2 years later saved his son. All right, Squire, I feel like I hear a collective sigh of relief.
Mm-hmm. You do, not just from Canucks Nation, but from the players and the coaching staff as well. When Thatcher Demko hurt his knee against Winnipeg on March 9th, he was determined to get back before the playoffs began. He knew he would cut it close, but the goal was to get back before the full season, get a couple of or at least one regular season game in. And as we have now found out, that goal has been reached. Players and coaches will tell you that Demko worked as much as one could on rehabbing his knee to get ready for the postseason. And no disrespect to Casey DeSmith or Artur Schelos, but Demko was the foundation on which the Canucks' playoff fortunes rest. You need a great goalie to do something in the postseason, and Rick Tocchet says Demko is that great goalie.
Yeah, just his temperament. Like, the big-time goalies, you can just tell, you know, when there's pressure hits you, they're not flipping and flopping, they're not diving all over. They continue with their style, you know, like, Demmer's a big goalie. He just looks big in the net. Doesn't matter if the team's all over us or if they're not. He stays in his who he is. That's why I love him, is that he is who he is at, during any part of the game.
Now, of course, Vancouver's best defenseman, in fact, their best defenseman in franchise history, is Quinn Hughes. But what management has done is surround Hughes with guys who can do what Hughes can't do, and that's use size to wear down opposing forwards. It's that kind of size you need in the playoffs. Not everyone has to be big, but you need some giants. And when it comes to the Canucks, their biggest men reside on their blue line.
Picked up. Evander Kane back to Adam Harik, but that didn't work. And my, oh my, Evander Kane didn't like that hit as Carson Soucy just leveled him.
Carson Soucy is one of three Canucks defensemen who are 6'5" or taller, and that's before they put their skates on. It's a beefy blue line role, but two of their defensemen on the current roster are 6 feet and above. And as we all know, come playoff time, size definitely matters, especially the longer a series lasts and the deeper your team goes.
Well, I think, you know, when you play a team, you know, seven times, it could be seven times, whatever, you're going against the same guys. It's a little bit of war attrition. You know, it's heavy for you. Guys that usually don't hit, usually hit now. I mean, everybody starts to play a little more uncomfortable. So bigger D, you know, protecting the guts of the ice. It helps having those type of guys. We have a bunch of those guys. So we'll see if it works. But I believe the way we defended this year with those big guys is going to help us in the playoffs.
Quinn Hughes is the little engine that drives the big Canucks machine, and it's one that's going to take its fair share of knocks come playoff time. But in the old hockey Bible, and especially come playoff time, it's better to give than receive when it comes to playoff punishment. And this is a defensive core that's been reading from the same scripture all season long.
Listen, every team plays the best defense of the year in the playoffs. Everybody's over top. Everybody closes, finishes hard, and everybody they don't swing away. Let's say that, right? You cut back on a guy, he doesn't just go for a skate, right? It's they dog the puck. Everyone's going all out. So everything you do needs to be harder.
You know, we have a lot of big bodies, and we want to use our size to our advantage, but also be smart with it. But like I said, I like the balance we have. You know, I think we have a really good balance of the type of players we are.
You know, everyone takes pride in their role and what they can do to help the team win, and there's no, you know, it's not a egomaniac group. It's very, team-oriented, and that's another part that, you know, management should give credit for, is they found not only the right players but the right people to put in the locker room.
Jay Janower, Global Sports.
Pittsburgh Penguins against the Nashville Predators. Oh, I gave it away. Okay. Anyway, Pittsburgh won it 4-2, which is probably not good news if you want to see Nashville and the Canucks for sure in round number one. Great goal there by Sidney Crosby. Now, the Penguins trying to stay in the playoff race. They need this one. The Predators, this is the last game for them in the regular season. So by losing this game, this is a nice goal too. Emil Bemström here for the Penguins. By losing this game, Nashville could still be caught for the first wild card spot by either the Kings or the Golden Knights. I don't know why this happens in Major League Baseball. I just don't know. Call it. Call it. And if they are calling it, no one's listening. Oh! That's Maple Ridge's Tyler O'Neill getting the worst of that collision with Rafael Devers. He suffered an 8-inch gash. You can see that little piece of his glasses flying off. 8-inch gash, and he is now in concussion protocol. Tyler O'Neill is. Hopefully he'll be back soon. And to no one's surprise, WNBA draft tonight, number one pick, the superstar, Caitlin Clark, who is now with the Indiana Fever. There you go.
Makes sense. All right. Thank you, Squire.
Never a doubt. All right. Thanks for watching. The Brush with Death and Startling Coincidence shared by a father and son coming up next.
Jordan Armstrong now with a look ahead to Global News at 11 tonight. Jordan?
Sophie, more tonight on the job losses in the restaurant industry. As we've reported, BC has lost 9,400 restaurant jobs so far this year, including 5,200 just last month. Tonight, we're speaking with some restaurant owners. Hear what they say about insurance hikes and how they're eating into their bottom line and, in many cases, forcing them to cut expenses and staff. Plus, Seattle also saw a pro-Palestinian blockade today, but the response from police was different than it was here. We'll show you that tonight at 11 when we're back with a full hour of news. Sophie?
All right, looking forward to that. Thank you, Jordan.
PNE staff and fellow hockey players are being celebrated for saving the lives of a father and son in two different incidents almost exactly 2 years apart.
As Janet Brown reports, both men went into medical distress while playing adult drop-in hockey at the PNE Agridome.
It's quite surreal.
Almost 2 months ago, Jason Louie nearly died after playing adult drop-in hockey at the PNE Agridome.
I remember playing the game and going to leave the rink with my friends. Next thing I knew, I think it was 3 days later, and I woke up in the hospital.
Unbelievably, almost 2 years ago to the day, his father, Harry, also playing hockey at the Agridome, suffered chest pains and needed help.
You know, I was playing hockey, and then when you get off the ice after the end of the game, I felt a little lightheaded, and then I ended up in hospital.
But I'm just grateful the outcome was of a positive one.
Well, thank you. Mike Nasser was at work on the PNE grounds when he heard the call for help for Jason come across his radio.
When I showed up, he did not look good. He was unresponsive, no pulse, no breathing. We just proceeded to do what we're trained to do, which is, you know, with the AEDs and the CPR.
Nasser also got the call 2 years ago when Jason's father, Harry, suffered chest pains during a game.
Just grateful he's okay. I think to me, it's really, that's the huge reward, seeing him happy and healthy.
In a ceremony at the Agridome, Nasser and others were honored for their heroic efforts.
CPR, early use of a defibrillator, someone can go home to their family.
Paramedics say everyone should know CPR.
60,000 people in Canada a year suffer sudden cardiac arrest.
And he says the other lifesaver, AEDs.
We have an on-off button and a shock button. This one doesn't have the screen, but it still is going to talk you through everything that you need to do.
I wake up every day happy to be able to sit up and get up and put my pants on one leg at a time.
Father and son not back on the ice again yet, but both grateful to have a second chance at life. Janet Brown, Global News.
I feel like he is now going to be a member of the family.
That's right. Adopted in for sure. And hopefully they can get back on the ice again. As soon as possible. Yeah. Okay, beautiful summer weather, summer-like weather as we get closer to the weekend here, Christy.
Thanks so much. So tomorrow's a bit of a transition day, especially for those of you in the interior cooler there. I wouldn't rule out a passing shower over the mountains and out through the Fraser Valley tomorrow, but overall it should be dry and look at the sunshine for Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday before a few showers are back in the forecast. over the weekend. We had nice timing of sunshine this past weekend, so we can't get two in a row. I don't think Mother Nature does that.
No, that's too much to ask around here, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Christy, and thanks everyone for watching. Have a great night.
Good night, all.